patreon.com/thewalkoffpodcast. $4 a month gets you in there.
Baseball, Blue Jays, and more baseball. It's the walk-off with Scott Belford and Adam Mack.
This ball is crushed.
The Die Hard podcast for the casual fan.
And another one. My goodness.
If you had to draw up the season opener at home, last night's exactly how it would go down in my books, man. Maybe not quite the Alek Manoa start we were hoping for, but.
Hold on. Of all the terrible terms we use, the season opener at home.
Not the way to do it.
Home opener.
Home opener.
Scott. What are you doing?
Yeah. Well, I started with season opener. Well, you know, whatever. Let's start over. Let's just start over. Can we please just start over? Okay.
3, 2, 1, and we're rolling.
The newly renovated Rogers Center on display yesterday. During the home opener.
A short porch in right field. That nice 8-foot center field wall.
Mark Shapiro was like a proud father last night. Hey, did you see him just beaming?
Yeah, I mean, of course. It was the season opener at home. How could you not be excited?
He could not talk enough about fan experience, eh?
You know, it was... I was a little bit uncomfortable seeing Hazel May in all the different neighborhoods out in the outfield. Mm-hmm. I was just waiting for something to go wrong.
Oh, the whole time I was like watching the people in the background. I'm like, are those dudes trustworthy? Did you pick the right spot, Hazel? Fingers crossed.
Fingers crossed. Yeah.
I just like the way he kept bringing up the enhanced fan experience. Yeah. Like he's on a video and he's like, enhance. Enhance.
He's like a CSI detective. And
yes, exactly.
Scott. Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon. It's a Wednesday.
Done late on a Wednesday. Look at us.
Perfect. All right.
Days mean nothing here on the walk-off. Hello, everybody. I'm Scott Belford, joined as always by the best co-host in the biz, Adam Mack. Every single week, we comb over your comments and interaction, and we address them here on the mailbag. You can always get a hold of us by DMing us at Walk-Off Podcast on Instagram, the Walk-Off Podcast on... sorry, other way around. The Walk-Off Podcast on Instagram. Okay. At Walk-Off Podcast on Twitter. You can get a hold of us on Discord. It is a happening place to be. If you are not a member of the Discord, feel free to join by DMing us and we'll send you a link and away you go. And of course, Patreon. That is one of the beauties of being a member of that Patreon, that exclusive Patreon bunch. Your questions and comments get bumped to the top. You are the priority, and we appreciate you very much. All right, let's get into it, I guess. Before we do get into the first question comment here, I don't know if everyone watching got to see the big production they did, the unveiling of the Rogers Center, but it really did feel like a 15-minute commercial. For the Rogers Center?
Yeah, something like they were like selling condos.
It literally felt like Soda Sopa on South Park, yeah. Where it was just like, finally, a place for the family to all come and gather. An enhanced fan experience. The villas at Rogers, yeah. Okay. Let's talk. Where do you want to start, bud? Twitter?
What better place to start than the old Twittersphere? Okay. Of course, after me spending all off season complaining about these outfield walls being too high, Kevin Kiermaier makes a home run robbing grab in the second inning. It was a beauty, a thing of beauty. Of course, you've seen it by now. What is it? 8-foot walls in center field? 7-foot walls? What is it?
8-foot walls.
Kiermaier country. Of course, we got our inbox was flooded.
Yes.
With comments rubbing this in our face.
In a good way, in a playful way, I'd like
in a
to
good
think.
Way. So Krish Jalafi tweeted us, and we're gonna just pick his comment as the one we're going with, but note there were dozens of these comments. You guys gonna stop crying about the new walls now? Hashtag Kiermaier.
I mean, like you said before we hit record, Adam, this is what you always wanted. Why are there tall walls at any point in this?
This outfield? Is the thing is like, why would you, again, if that's a 10-foot wall, it's still a nice catch, but he's just taking away a double. Right? Like, why would you want, after seeing that, if anything, I'm going to cry harder. I'm going to say, give me 8-foot walls the whole way across the outfield. Like, for real. It's
but everybody knows this about you. Because the follow-up comment on that tweet was from friend of the show, Mustard Tiger, at Josh Derbecker on Twitter. And he was like, I thought of Adam as soon as this happened.
Yeah, of course. I mean, and you and I and Joel, and we're talking about it in our text chains. Like, of course, that was a thing of beauty. Like, why would you not want to see more of that? I mean, I'm grateful that we have a low wall out in center field, but give me that height the whole way across. I just don't know. Ugh. I'm annoyed. It's going to be a point of contention for me all season long. But Kevin Kiermaier, great debut in Toronto.
Yeah, just, he's really endeared awesome. Himself to the fan base, eh?
Yeah.
How do you not love Kiermaier roaming those outfield?
Got his first ice bath of the year.
First ice bath, first dinger in Rogers Center as a Blue Jay.
As a Blue Jay.
I don't want to talk about his previous.
We don't need to get into that.
No.
All right, let's skip ahead to the very last comment. I was going to save this for the end here, but this just ties in nicely. So James and the Giant Peach says, who's your favorite new Blue Jay? Is it Dalton Buntsingle Varsho? He's provided nicknames for all of them. So is it Dalton Buntsingle Varsho? Is it Kevin I Got It Kiermaier? Or is it Chris? No, not that one. No, not that one. No, not that one. No, not that one. No, not that one, Bassett.
I love.
I mean, Chris Bassett has the best nickname, right?
I love this question. You know what? I truly am letting logic get in the way of this decision because I got to go with Dalton Varsho. Dalton Buntsingle Varsho, as he so adequately put it, right? Adequately.
I was going to say eloquently, but adequately.
Eloquently. Yeah. Adequately.
Decently enough put it.
Decently enough, it was good enough, right? Eloquently. Maybe eloquent is a better word to use there. I don't know.
Dalton Varsho. Yeah, it's a good choice.
But I'm going with Varsho, and it's, again, it is logic. It's that he's going to be a member of this organization for a full 4 years. So get on board. Kevin Kiermaier been loving what he's providing in the outfield. And, man, he's hitting 350. Nobody's talking about it because he's like 100 points under Vladdy, and nobody's talking about Vladdy because Vladdy's like 50 points on his average under Chapman. So it's just like these guys are hot. Rolling. The offense is rolling, but yeah, I got to go with Varsho. Where are you at on your new favorite acquisition?
I mean, it's definitely not Chris Bassett, despite the awesome nickname. I'm enjoying Kevin Kiermaier more than I expected to. I'll say that. Well-timed cough button, by the way, Scott. Very, very nicely done.
Yeah. Choking on my coffee here.
Yeah, no, Dalton Varsho, I think, okay, here's what it comes down to for me, is I was never a big believer in, there. Not that I wasn't a big believer in, but I was never a Teoscar Hernandez is a piece of this team moving forward kind of guy. And I know it's not just a one-to-one exchange rate, but that's what my brain has connected is Kiermaier was the replacement for Teoscar because we got rid of Teoscar and then we signed Kiermaier. And then obviously the Lourdes and Moreno for Dalton Varsho. So I don't know where I was going with that. My point is the expectations, the pressure for Dalton Varsho to really
make an impact
and take off that sting of losing one of the prospects I was the most excited about in Gabriel Moreno versus Kevin Kiermaier, who was replacing a guy that I wasn't really high on anyways. So my expectations for Kiermaier were kind of low. And he's obviously exceeded them. But Dalton Varsho was someone that I was really hoping I would like. And it's always a tough spot when you hope that you like someone. But he's done everything I could have ever asked for, Dalton Varsho. The way he runs the bases, I mean, he's hitting off lefties. That was supposed to be a black hole in his swing. I mean, again, small sample size, right?
He does add an element to this batting order that didn't exist before with the way he runs the bases, with the fact that he can lay down a bunt. Like, that's something that this team has lacked as a skill set for years. And I'm not a guy who's big on dropping down bunts, but it is a very valuable tool to at least have in your toolbox. I love this comment in Discord from SCTI, Ian, friend of the show. And he said, and I think he really sums up the feeling on Kiermaier here for most Toronto fans. He says, "I'll be honest. I was meh on the KK signing. I saw him as a fourth outfielder and used for defensive replacements and Springer insurance. I hated him as a Ray, but as he went and stole my heart last night, I'm not sure our outfield is matched by any other team."
Okay, well, I've said it on, I think, more than one occasion in 2023, the Blue Jays maybe have the best infield in baseball. Mm-hmm. The Cardinals with Arenado and Goldschmidt, those are two MVP candidates. Blue Jays have three people that are going to get MVP votes at this pace in Bo Bichette, mm-hmm. Vladdy, and Matt Chapman. And then we have like three guys who could be all-stars if they played full-time. Maybe that's generous for Kevin Biggio.
It's generous for Biggio, but the fact that Espinal and Merrifield have all-star games in their past, I mean, it does speak to the quality of this infield, without a doubt.
But, yeah, that outfield. I mean, I haven't looked at the other outfields in baseball. I'm sure Astros have a wild outfield if I really started looking at the names out there. Blue Jays have a really good outfield. Yeah, the three of them. If we can get 140 games out of the three of them, buddy.
I'll ask, but I like it. Oh, man, that would be incredible. And I think that's what shifting Springer out of center and having three guys who can roam that center field position has really set this team up to do, is maximize the amount of games that these guys can stay on the field. Or that's the dream.
That is the dream. Okay, well, let's shift our view slightly and look at the pitching then. Next comment comes in from Cito Strikes Back on Twitter. Says, "Hey guys, everyone keeps talking about Kikuchi and Berríos and how much rope they have. Pardon my ignorance, but who in the minors would be a better option? Or even a list of viable options would be appreciated. Great pod. Thanks for the content."
So you're welcome. Thanks for reaching out, Cito Strikes Back. Love the Twitter handle, by the way. This is a really good question. And really, I think he's kind of alluding to what we're about to get to, which is, truthfully, there are no better options than what we're currently rolling with in the starting rotation. When we talk about how much rope does a guy get, I guess it's more along the lines of how long do we go until everyone's panicking and doing things like last year where Berríos is being put on the IL for a brief stint, or Kikuchi's all of a sudden in AAA rehabbing, you know, that sort of thing. As for options, they're out there. The most viable options right now that I think we would see for a start, a spot start, would be Drew Hutchison. He was picked up. He's not on the 40-man roster. He was signed to a minor league deal. He's been all right in AAA in his two starts so far this season. I know, Adam, you've got the stats pulled up here.
Yes, I do. I'm sorry. I was looking at the wrong Drew Hutchison. His stat line through... it's like just one outing in AAA, three innings pitched, six strikeouts, three walks.
Mm-hmm.
No, sorry. That's strikeouts per nine. Six strikeouts per nine, three walks per nine. Oh, I need another coffee, Scott. These 7 a.m. jobs are tough. Yeah, Drew Hutchison, I don't know. Nothing gets me excited there.
No, and nor should it. 32 years old. He's kind of kicked around and never really found his A spot since he was dominant for the Blue Jays in 2014 and got the nod in 2015 to start the season opener. He has fallen from grace, to say the least. I mean, the other viable option down in AAA, and viable might even be a strong word, is Casey Lawrence. We know what he gives us. Another veteran dude in the minor leagues, 33 years old. He's been there. He's done that. He's a guy who can definitely step in.
Does he have the most starts in the history of Blue Jays minor leaguers?
That is a great question.
I don't
know.
Like, he's just been a minor leaguer for a decade.
He has. He's been a yo-yo guy his whole career. It doesn't matter what organization he's playing with. Neither of these guys are on the 40-man roster, so something would need to give if they were to. And in all honesty, it would be a really bad scenario if they're going to Drew Hutchison or Casey Lawrence. Bad tacos have probably happened in this horrible scenario. Go ahead, Adam, sorry.
Casey Lawrence has two games so far, 15 strikeouts through 10 innings, zero walks.
This is why Casey Lawrence continues to pitch in AAA, right? He's a good pitcher in AAA. He's just not that next level guy.
Just the definition of a 4A guy.
He's a 4A guy, has been his whole career.
The other option, I would love to be a 4A guy myself.
Oh, man. For him, like, this is the thing that's so impressive with Casey Lawrence, is he really has stuck around the minor leagues for over 10 years. Not a lot of guys can do that. Not a lot of guys have the perseverance to stick with it.
Mm-hmm.
Most dudes would have quit. Bowden Francis, he was, of course, the prospect throw-in for Trevor Richards in that Brewers trade a couple years ago that sent Rowdy Tellez to Milwaukee. He has a skill set that could be used in a emergency situation. Like, again, these aren't very good options. If we are talking viable options that maybe could truly step in and contribute to this 2023 team, Mitch White is on the DL or the IL currently, right? He's doing some rehab starts. I think he's in Double A right now doing some rehab starts. He's just building himself up until he's ready to come off the injured list.
I think he's ready.
Yeah, I know they're trying.
This is just fancy GM moves, and they're trying to stall and make a decision on Trevor Richards. That's all it is, in my opinion.
So now we're talking guys that are more on the prospect list here. Once we start heading down here, Yosfer Zulueta is a very interesting name to keep an eye on. I know we were talking with Julia Cruz of MLB.com about Zulueta and just the fact that he is being stretched out currently in AAA. He pitched a couple days ago, three innings, had six strikeouts, had a walk. He has the ability to stretch out to a starter. If they need him in the bullpen, they'll shrink it down. He could be the long man. There are options for Zulueta as to how they go about getting this guy some major league games. I think you'd need to see him dominate in a starting role in AAA before they even truly considered it. Ricky Tiedemann maybe could push his way on later in the season. Like, truly, Cito Strikes Back's point, I think, is like, what are we talking about here with how much rope? Like, what are the options? And it's a good point. What are the options? There are not a lot of very good options that you would want to see in this major league rotation.
We talked about Nate Pearson as a like viable guy to replace Trevor Richards. Like, There's zero chance he's a starter this year.
Zero chance,
right,
that they push Nate Pearson to start.
Yeah, Nate Pearson is what's the excitement level on a Nate Pearson over a Trevor Richards? Do you feel good that would be an upgrade? Because he hasn't done even anything this year to show that. He's got velocity. He's got that cheddar on his pitches. But without control, doesn't really matter, right? For me, what it comes down to is he's a guy with upside. Like, yeah. He's not, the prospect sheen has worn off on Nate Pearson. However, he is still a guy with upside. Trevor Richards, I'm just not seeing the upside. Yeah, like,
I mean, Trevor Richards is still on this team for one reason, and that is an elite changeup. But when every other pitch he throws is below average, it is not enough. And there may be some sort of pitching coach out there, Rubik's Cube expert, who can unlock that Trevor Richards potential. But from what we've seen,
Pete Walker, I don't know who it is.
I right there with you, buddy. No idea how to go about doing it. I think that Trevor Richards is on his last legs as a Toronto Blue Jay, especially as Mitch White gets closer to coming back. Mitch White has no options. You can't stash him in AAA. Trevor Richards has no options. You can't lower him down without exposing him to waivers. He'll get picked up. That is why Trevor Richards has not already been given his out-and-out release, is that the Blue Jays are worried about asset management and don't wish to lose him for nothing, because they do see value in that changeup. But what good is that value if you can't unlock it?
Yeah, he's a guy to send out there with a lead or a big deficit. I don't know. Can he give you multiple innings? Is that where we're at? Hey, we don't have confidence in Berríos and Kikuchi to give us even four innings, so that's why we're keeping Trevor Richards around in case we need two out of him on a bad day. I don't like that. I mean, I guess you need it. You need those guys.
Adam, this is where we're at with Trevor Richards. Every time he pitches, the fan base is like, oh, imagine if we had a long man. When you're longing for a long man, things are not good. Yeah. Things are not good.
True. All right, well, let's move on from there then. Anything else you want to add about the pitchers?
Just fingers crossed that Kikuchi and Berríos find it and we don't need to worry about this.
Yeah. Well, next one comes in. This is from AA Ron in Discord. It says, it's frustrating to hear this from Atkins. I'd prefer to hear him take accountability.
Right, and then he posted a Keegan Mathison tweet.
Keegan,
right?
Mathison tweet here, so I'll just read that Keegan Mathison tweet. Blue Jays GM Ross Atkins on Jose Berríos. The quote is, I'm excited about Jose. He's punched out 12 guys in 9 innings and has not walked many hitters at all. He's had some unfortunate outcomes with not a lot of hard contact at all. So A.A. Ron goes on to add, the facts just don't back this up at all on Berríos. literally had 51% hard hit rate this year, even if his K to walk ratio is elite. In fairness, his xERA is 6 runs lower than his actual ERA. So for anybody who it may be a bozo like me, explain the difference between xERA versus ERA. xERA is the mutant version, right?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
So xERA is going to take out fielding and park dimensions, I think.
No love for my X-Men joke. We're just moving right past today.
Eh? Wow. You're really hitting the wrong demographic for that one, buddy. My apologies.
All right. Well,
the Marvel world has never been my forte.
All right. Fair enough. So let's talk Jose Berríos then. What are your thoughts on this?
I mean, let's talk Ross Atkins to begin with, because that's his beef here, that Ross Atkins came out and wasn't as forthcoming with how he actually felt about Jose Berríos as maybe A.A. Ron was hoping. He was hoping he'd take a little accountability and be like, yes, Jose Berríos is struggling. We are concerned. Listen, Ross Atkins is a robot that has been purchased by Rogers to speak general manager. And nobody does it better than Ross Atkins. It is so funny how you listen to Mark Shapiro and you're just like, he's so genuine. He's so nice. And you listen to Ross Atkins every single time and you're like, how does this man do it? Because he's not a man. He's a robot. And he is here just to give you that exact answer. So I don't know if we can be all that upset with Ross Atkins. This is exactly what he does. He goes in and he speaks GM. Now, as for Jose, go ahead. Sorry, buddy.
I was just going to say, do you ever have, like, because this is a man who just purchased a 7-year contract with Jose Berríos. Like, what else do you expect him to say?
Mm-hmm.
Do you expect him to go, yeah, this one's on me? Berríos is washed. Like, that was a big botch job on my part. Like, you know, we've all made purchases that we almost instantly regret. You know, you spend $600 on a taco glove. You spend too much money on a TV, and then you talk yourself into, well, this TV has Wi-Fi connections, though. Like, it's only 1080p, but it's got good sound. You know. Like Jose Berríos, man, we got 6 more years with him.
Oh man, Jose Berríos. Honestly, yeah, almost got a feel for the dude at this point, because my goodness, whenever he's on the mound, the microscope is zoomed right in. He doesn't get a lot of breathing room when it comes to this fan base. Not saying he should after the last year and a month that we've watched. That said, I mean, he is a human being, and obviously the pressure can start to mount and start to get to a guy. Who knows where Jose Berríos is mentally? I know there was even talk he was going through some strife with his wife, you know, and there was divorce talks last year. Who knows if that's even any better? I know that is one thing that, like, yeah, they're not talking about divorce anymore, but is that a bad thing? Yeah, like, I don't know.
Rip that Band-Aid off, Jose. Rip that Band-Aid off, my friend.
But this is where we're at. Like, Jose Berríos has been such an enigma to this fan base that we're reaching at straws. Is it like we're like, is it his wife's fault? Like, I don't know, man. Like, where am I at with Jose Berríos? Where are any of us at? I don't even know what to say. I'm out of words when it comes to speaking Jose Berríos.
Look, life advice for anybody who's in a bad relationship, man, woman, or otherwise. If you're in a situation where you've got to make it work, like for the kids or whatever, I feel you. Do your best to figure that out as soon as you can, though, because it might be ugly for Jose Berríos for the next year, but like, he's still a young lad. He's only 29. He's got his whole 6 more years with us ahead of him. So if he's got to rip that Band-Aid off, I mean, there is a light at the end of the tunnel to be found. But dragging his feet, I don't know. I'm going with this, man. But like,
I can double down on this advice. Listen to everyone out there, man, woman, and everyone else. Relationship advice. Please stop letting it affect your pitching. We beg you.
We beg you. Yes, exactly. No, it's just, I don't know, with Jose Berríos, I don't know what else to say, Scott. It's
truly, this is where we're at, man.
We're in for the long haul.
Like it or not.
How would you like to see him handled moving forward? He's got another start coming up. Let's frame it this way, because his last outing, he threw 71 pitches, got him through four innings. Four earned runs on four innings. Do you want to see them save the bullpen and just say, well, we're running you out for 100 pitches, even if it's 8-0 at the end of five, we need an extra inning? Or do you want to see the quick yank where it's like, ooh, 3-0 after two, he's 60 pitches in, but let's yank him while we still have a chance to save the game? I don't know which one's better. I don't know which one's worse. I don't want to see it consistently, and it feels like.
I look at this AL East division, and in my opinion, every single win you can get is paramount. I don't think at this point in the season we're in save the bullpen mode. I think that there are options, and that if Berríos is really struggling, it's not doing anyone any favors to just go out there and let him get shellacked. I understand the idea of, you can't, especially with Kikuchi as the guy, the next up, right? And so many question marks, and you're like, hopefully Chris Bassett is back on track, because if it's got to go Bassett, Berríos, Kikuchi, where you're worrying about eating innings, yeah, that is a problem. But right now, as we're sitting 11 games into the season, so when Berríos takes the mound next, I think we'll be going into game 14. We've got Gausman and Bassett finishing off this Tigers series. Berríos will be starting the series against the Rays. If he gets hit hard, I'm still of the belief, let's try and get that W and let's get him out of there. Again, I don't think it's going to benefit him to just let him get hit hard. Right now, that's where I'm at. Where are you? Like, I understand we have, and I understand the trepidation in not letting him eat innings, because we have watched this bullpen, once it gets its back to the wall, the last 2 years, right? We have watched this bullpen be overused and have seen the detriment of operating the bullpen that way. But I, at this point in the season, I don't know.
This is the best bullpen we've had in years. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But a tired bullpen is not a good bullpen. I don't know, man. I mean, Chris Bassett needs to give us innings. There's so much pressure on Alek Manoah, Kevin Gausman, to give us seven innings just as an off day for our bullpen, if nothing else. I mean, thankfully, our offense has been pretty good, right?
Our offense so far has been, our offense has been the shining bright spot without a doubt. And I know that there are probably people who just are ready to throw both the bullpen and the starting pitching rotation under the bus. However, the numbers don't look so bad for the bullpen, even though there have been a couple of dark spots. The Toronto Blue Jays bullpen ERA combined is a sitting at a 3.51 ERA, which is good for 11th in baseball. Now, the starting rotation, on the other hand, not so pretty, sitting at 21st in all of baseball with a 5.06 combined ERA. So that is a sky-high ERA for an entire staff, especially considering the Toronto Blue Jays were really hoping that this starting rotation would be a lot closer to the top 10 in the league than the bottom 10.
Jose Berríos, man, it's a lot of pressure on him against the Rays this week.
Yeah,
I don't know how to put it any nicer than that. Like, he needs to show up, and
You know what's really frustrating, Adam, is that even if Jose Berríos comes out and has a killer game, seven innings, allows a couple runs, does it?
There's no monkey off the back
at all. No. Yeah, right. It doesn't alleviate anything except we can breathe easy for one day.
Yeah, I mean, I have more confidence in Yusei Kikuchi right now than I do in Jose Berríos. Like going into
that.
And that's
not saying much either.
It's not saying much. But like if you told me that one of them got through four innings against the Rays, I'd probably put my money on Yusei Kikuchi having done that. Mm-hmm. That's where I'm at. And that's not a good feeling to have. Especially when I feel like we're in for a regressive season from Alek Manoah, but I don't want to spend any time on that today.
Okay. I am fine with that.
We're going to turn down to Patreon. A couple comments here. First one from Wyatt. Did it seem like the Angels were a better team this year than last year and more competitive? Or is it just me making excuses for how that series played out? Angels look good.
Angels looked very good. And the Jays took 2 of 3. It may not have been the prettiest 2 of 3 we've ever seen.
It's fun to watch.
But let's... A W is a W, and you take it every single time. But yes, this Angels team is substantially better than last year, in my opinion. It's the pitching. The pitching has taken a step forward. Sandoval has looked really good. Detmers looked good. You got Ohtani at the top of that rotation. And I mean, you kind of mentioned it before we hit record here on the mailbag. Ohtani and Trout, dude, they're in midseason form after that WBC.
Yeah, played some real competitive baseball in April. That's an advantage, man.
I mean, we'll see if it's an advantage. We'll see if it's an advantage come September and how they hold up. But currently, right now, yes, the Angels are a much better team than we were expecting them to be. And that said, I the little caveat, the little twist here, the Angels actually started last year not too shabby either. And then really hit a wall come May. So time will tell how good this Angels team really is.
All right.
The AL West is up for grabs, though, buddy. That AL West is up for grabs.
It is. It sure is. Let's have a look at around the league because there's a couple divisions that are surprising right now. I mean, again, it's early, right?
Very
we got to say that. We always got to say that. But AL West, Texas looks decent.
Mm-hmm.
Houston, slow start, not worried about them.
No.
Oakland, right where we expected them to be, so that's good. At least something's staying the same. And now Central, man. The Cubs. No, the Cardinals at 4-7.
Yeah.
They'll bounce back. The Pirates, however, 7-4. Tough loss Pirates losing to O'Neill Cruz, by the way.
Pirates look good. Yes, that O'Neill Cruz loss, that is a tough one for them to take. Of course, their 6'7" stud young shortstop that was supposed to lead this team to the promised land had that unfortunate slide into the catcher there and broke his ankle. Just brutal. But all the best to him and his recovery. But no, the Pirates look good.
NL West got the Diamondbacks leading that division right now at 7-5. Dodgers 6-6. Yeah.
It's very early, Scott. But
it'll sort itself out.
It'll sort itself out, but there are some teams that have looked better than maybe expected so far.
All right. Rashid also from Patreon says, are we going to do live stream watch alongs again this year? You and I have discussed this and yeah, that is the plan. They're going to be Patreon exclusives, though.
Yes.
Reason being, it's just not an enjoyable experience for us to do it on YouTube, where for like 2.5-3 hours, you and me got to do the whole YouTube shtick. It's disingenuous. It's not a good time for anybody to have us constantly trying to...
By the way, if that is how if that is how you like to consume your content for games, that is awesome. Like, I totally get the appeal to it. It's honestly just a real heavy workload for Adam and I. So what we're doing is we're going to go on Patreon and do it. It's going to be a little bit more genuine and a little bit more like buds sitting informal around doing it.
Yeah,
exactly. Informal is a good way of putting it. And we're going to do it once a month instead of weekly as we were. And our apologies. We know how many of you really did enjoy it, and it means a lot, and we appreciate that. But for now, Patreon exclusive.
So we're looking at April 23rd as the Yankees game on a Sunday. The April game that we're going to be doing the live stream watch along for.
So come hang out.
Come hang out. It'll probably be fun. How I foresee this going down is we'll just throw a Zoom link in the Patreon, and then feel free to join us on Zoom. We'll probably have it like lecture style school situation where Scott and I will be unmuted and our webcams on, and everybody else can just be muted and typing it out in the chat. And if anybody wants to speak up, you know, we can have you raise your hand or something, and
absolutely,
we'll get you in, and then we'll get some discussions going and stuff. But just so it's not like, you know, 20 people all on the microphone at once, be kind of messy. But yeah, so watch along live streams are back in a modified version this year. Yankees game, April 23rd, patreon.com/walkoffpodcast.
Yes.
Okay. Let's move on now. The next one comes in from Divine Levin. Second guessing myself here. This might be Devin 11 as a username. That makes more sense. Devin 11 says, Rays continue to roll. 11. Shut up, Scott.
Divine Levin. Divine Levin. We're going with Divine Levin.
Divine Levin. All right. Rays continue to roll. 11-0. I was listening to Blair and Barker yesterday, and they talked about kind of hoping the Rays would come into town undefeated. How do you guys feel about that? And are the Rays that good, or is it just early in the year?
Can it be both? Can the Rays be this good, but also it be early in the year? Listen, the Tampa Bay Rays. Let's start with this. To win 11 games in a row, that is an incredible feat. That is incredibly difficult to do. And on top of it, it's probably going to require some luck and some comeback wins, and just some bounces going your way. The Rays also have played shitty teams. Doesn't mean 11 wins makes it any easier. It's still incredibly difficult to win that amount of games in a row. The Tampa Bay Rays are an incredibly good team this year. Their pitching is healthy, and they continue to have guys like Drew Rasmussen and Jeremy Springs come out of nowhere and look like aces. I mean, Rasmussen is literally doing what Springs did last year, which is what Glasnow did the year before, and so on and so forth. You could go year to year from the Rays and just be like, oh, that's where they got that guy that's now an ace. Okay, wonderful.
I mean,
wanting the Jays to be the team to break their streak, yeah, that'd be fun. The Rays need to win the next two games to do that. That also said, man, wins are going to be at maximum value in this division. So to hope that the Rays don't take a loss in these next two games, I'm not there.
Yeah, fair. I mean, from the like spiteful standpoint, it would be cool to ruin their streak, but also
yes, take an L.
Take an L.
I'm fine with it.
For the record, Toronto Blue Jays, in their entire franchise history, how many 11 game winning streaks do you think we have?
Three.
We have five. Two of them happened in 2015, one in 2013, 1998, 1987 were the other ones. We have zero 12-game winning streaks. So it's pretty impressive. But it's more impressive because it's the start of the year.
Yes, it is.
You know, if this was just a run that they went on in August, it's just like, yeah, this team's hot right now, but it's it's magnified. It's just like every start, you know, individual performances. Matt Chapman is looking good. You know, the same is Matt Chapman going to hit 450 all year? No. Are the Rays going to be 100% win percentage all year? No. So it's fine. The Rays are good, but they've played nobody.
Truly. Truly, they haven't played any of the top teams or contending teams yet.
All disrespect again to the Tigers, the Nationals, the A's, and the Red Sox. I think the term is no disrespect, but yeah, all disrespect to those four clubs. All disrespect. That don't impress me much, as Shania once wrote and sang. Yeah, I'm
so adequately,
come on in.
So adequately put that Shania so adequately put.
Yes. Adequately put by Shania. Yeah, come on into Toronto. I'm not intimidated by the Rays this year. They are a very good team. I already knew they were going to be. That's how I feel. All right. Last one to get to, and then we're out of here, Scott.
Okay.
Loads of questions and comments, arguing, discoursing.
This is about, yeah, right.
About Bo Bichette as a shortstop and Santiago Espinal. It comes down to this. We talked last week about Kevin Barker saying it's only a matter of time before one of those second basemen is like, hey, I'm not getting enough. Right. And these are professional players who are playing for paychecks. And like Espinal is a guy who going into arbitration, going into free agency, tough to state your case for a extra $1 million when you play
relegated to the bench
60 games in a season, right? If you're not a full-time guy, you're not getting paid as much. And the fact is Espinal could be a full-time guy
everyday
on a lot of teams.
100%.
So would Espinal request a trade? That's what it comes down to. Everybody, not everybody, a lot of people seem to take this as the Jays would be crazy to trade Espinal. Or here's why the Jays wouldn't trade Espinal. But the point of it was not would the Jays want to. Obviously, the Jays would want to keep Espinal.
Which is why they've set this little merry-go-round at second base up this way, is to manage their assets.
The point isn't do the Jays want to get rid of Espinal. The point is does Espinal want to get rid of the Jays? And all these comments came down to we can't lose Espinal because then who's playing second base or then who's playing shortstop, right? He is our only guy that can play shortstop. But at the same time, Scott, everybody's down on Bo's defense. So my question to you is simply this. If his defense is so bad, why do we need an elite defender at shortstop to replace him? Like, if Bo Bichette goes down with bad tacos, the drop-off to Espinal is the same as the drop-off to Otto Lopez, as an unproven Addison Barger, as Kevin Biggio, right? Like, I know Kevin Biggio looked bad playing third base, but would he be that much worse at shortstop defensively than Bo Bichette? Like, I don't think
I mean,
so.
Offensively, there's not there's almost not a shortstop in the league that can replace.
So offensively, there's a massive shortstop to as a replacement for Bo Bichette if he spends any time in the infirmary. But you're getting that with Espinal at shortstop anyways. Like, Espinal is not replacing Bo Bichette's offensive stats.
Offense, so, of course not.
So what are we talking about here?
It's a good question. I mean, I personally, if you are going to take that sort of drop off at a position offensively, you would obviously like the replacement to be as good defensively as you possibly can do. I don't know if Espinal is a huge drop off if you go to Otto Lopez. You know, Otto Lopez is younger, has less time at shortstop, hasn't had major league reps, but we've already gone over the reps that Espinal has had at shortstop in the major leagues, and it's almost none at all. So he's very capable, had plenty of reps in the minor leagues at shortstop. It's a good question. You know, with it being such a draw, like, again, with Bo being such a defensively,
is his defense as below average as his offense is above average?
Yeah, I don't know, man.
I don't think so. I think his bat is way above average.
I would say so too. I mean, it's so hard with Bo because I really do. I'm a fan, you know, and I try not to be biased and just ignore his defensive warts. That said, when you look around the league, you see plenty of shortstops who lack defensive prowess, and nobody touches the bat that Bo is bringing to the table. So I don't know, man. Like, it's a real weird quagmire, and I totally get the question of, with Bo being such an Achilles heel at shortstop defensively, what does it matter who his replacement is? Like, it's going to be such a hit offensively that if it's Otto Lopez or Espinal, does it make that big of a difference? I don't think it does. I don't think there is any player that is completely irreplaceable. You know, it's like when you're working a job, right? You feel like you're irreplaceable. You know everything in and out, right? And you're like, I'll walk out of here. But it happens all the time. People walk out and they get replaced.
Yeah. It's crazy to me how good Bo's bat is, though. He's hitting 350 with 4 home runs.
Yeah. And nobody's even noticed. This is how hot this lineup is.
like
Bo has 4 home runs. He's hitting over 350.
It's wild. Yeah, it's Bo Bichette, pretty good.
Dalton Varsho is hitting 302, and he is he's the black fifth spot in that top 5. Yeah.
I know. I mean, the bats can't stay hot all year, but
all season long, but hopefully pitching picks it up by the time that is a concern.
It's nice. How you feeling about Brandon Belt? Had a nice little game in the season opener at home.
I was not as concerned as many people was.
I'm concerned, and I still am.
I'm not concerned at all. It didn't change anything, in my opinion, him going 3-for-4. He still has some work to do and some, he has some things to show us still, but it's always good to see a guy come home to Toronto and hit well in the Rogers Center, which is what they brought Brandon Belt in to do. So hopefully that continues. I think Belt's fine. I think Belt's going to find it. I was never really all that worried about it. I think he's going to provide this team with what they were hoping that he would, which is some power from the left-hand side, a guy who can split up the righties in the lineup, and a very viable bench bat who could come in a pinch hit spot. I think that's Brandon Belt to a T.
Yeah, I think veteran experience. I think he's going to be a slow starter that is going to help us win at the end of the year with George Springer in the October games. I feel like I'm still down on Brandon Belt. What a bummer of a way to end this episode. But it was a good game from Brandon Belt yesterday.
It was. It was great. Couple if doubles.
Hit around 250 all season long and just not be like a black hole in that lineup, I'll be satisfied. I mean, he's old. I don't know. I guess I'm having to reckon with my expectations that I had coming in. I was higher on him than I think was fair.
Yeah, probably.
And I'm just having to
readjust in this moment. Recalibrate.
So adequately put. All right, Scott, let's get out of here.
Thank you so much, everybody, for all the interaction over the week. You can always reach out to us on Twitter at Walk Off Podcast, Instagram, The Walk Off Podcast. Shoot us a message. We'll send you the Discord link. The Discord is happening all the time with Jay's talk and baseball talk, and it's with people from all over the world. So there really is no time where baseball talk isn't happening. It's very cool. And the Patreon, a tip of the hat. Just, we really appreciate all of you out there. The Walk Off Podcast Patreon. Go ahead, Adam.
Let's start again. 3, 2, 1, and we're rolling. All right. Monday morning mailbag on a Tuesday afternoon. From the
Welcome, everybody. Yes.
All right. Bye, Scott. Bye, Patreon. Bye, Dad. Bye, Scott. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to the Walk Off Podcast with Scott Belford and Adam Mack, with a new episode every Friday.
Oh! Oscar with a drive. Cheese and crackers. Chose to pitch to him. Wrong move.
Thanks for listening.